Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and the 12 steps. Produced, hosted, and posted by people in recovery who've been given strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
All right. Hey, what's up? This is Christian with the Most High Show, and right now we're chilling at Seaside Beach, and sitting with me are two amazing individuals, Dan and Dean, and we've been on an adventure for the last couple days, and they've been the guide, and I've just been along for the ride. And so along that, we've been having a lot of great conversations, and one of the things that came up was idea, metaphysics, science, and God, right? The God concept is a big deal for us in recovery. And, you know, beautifully, the 12 steps doesn't make you put a certain name on it and allows it to be. But for some of us, it's really hard, right, to reconcile with a God of our childhood or a religion of our childhood. And so I think this is a really great conversation to have. And so Dan and I started the conversation on the ride over here. So I want to let you kind of kick things off a little bit. And before you do, just tell us a little bit about who you are and why you're sitting here on the beach doing a podcast.
Well, thanks, Christian. I'm basically a zombie. I should have been dead, but I'm not. It's a little bit like being the living dead when you're in recovery from a really severe addiction. And that's where I come from. That's the whole standpoint I come from. Raised in organized religion, and a God of my understanding came about from a different angle than that organized religion. And what we really got to talking about, for me, starts off around the idea of one of the laws of motion, which is an object will stay in motion in a particular direction until it's acted upon by a force. In other words, something just stays in a straight line on its apparent destiny until something comes in and influences it or collides with it or pushes it or does something with it to change its direction. And when I think of the time that I got out of using, I think about that, that something on a definite motion was collided with. And what I would tell you today is that collision was with the will of God, that something happened outside of my power. Something came from outside of me and changed my direction and sent me in a different direction, which I continue on today. So the ideas behind metaphysics for me, the idea of, you know, something that is unseen or not of the physical world affecting my life is a very real thing and tested upon day after day from the standpoint of prayer and meditation, 11-step work. When I met Dean, that was sort of that type of a manifest of fate where, you know, things I was looking for and people of a like mind from the world of work, I'm always seeking and I seldom find. And then I ran across Dean, and I'm sure Dean's got some thoughts on how he got here too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Metaphysics, what is that even? Like, what?
The word metaphysics means above physics or outside of the physical
outside
world.
Outside of the physical world, so non-physical world related stuff.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
So I guess it's kind of inaccurate, right?
Yeah.
It's not actually metaphysics, it actually is physics.
Yeah, well, that I think that's the misconception, is that when I talk about the things of metaphysics, or I'm going to an old phrase, and metaphysics was used to explain occurrences that we didn't have mathematical equations for, or that science had not verified through mathematics. And what we have, this the most interesting thing, and a physicist named Arthur Eddington points this out, is in mathematics we have a world of symbols, but the symbols aren't what they reveal. They are just symbols, and what's behind those symbols and why they work is somewhere where you find metaphysics. So think of it in terms of, you know, why does the plus sign bring two things together? Why does pi have a number that never ever resolves? You know, what is it about mathematical symbols that represent something? And religion is full of that very same thing, right? The deity is not the symbol itself, it's the thing behind the symbol.
It's kind of the stuff that cannot be explained by rules that we use, mathematical rules or whatever they are, and it's beyond that.
It seems like it, and since then, much of it has come to be. You know, our feelings and our thoughts and the way that we work in the world can really change our experience. We can change what happens outside of us or how we perceive it by changing our own chemistry. And we know now that electromagnetic energy and chemistry result in things like emotions and feelings and thoughts. And things like our brain put out a certain amount of an electromagnetic field, and our heart puts out a much larger electromagnetic field. And in essence, we, you guys, me, everybody on planet Earth, is just an antenna of electromagnetic radiation. Like my eyes pick up photons, and my skin picks up infrared energy, and my ears pick up energy that's waves or vibrations across the molecules of the air we call sound. And it's not sound until it hits an eardrum and gets processed in my brain. So metaphysics brings us to that idea that something else occurs. And it's really best explained by saying my reality is created by my mind. Albert Einstein had a great phrase, and he said, everything is an illusion, albeit a very persistent one. And in that, we find reality. And sometimes I find solace in the physical world, and I want to believe in the benefit of physical things, what we might call materialism. But the benefit in recovery comes from a belief that a power greater than myself, that something far bigger than me, far more influential, perhaps as the creator God, some people will look at it. Some people might look at it, the coordinator God or the manifester of opportunity. Or some look at God as a condemning God, an authoritarian that's judging you by the rules you follow and how well you keep creeds. Whatever the case might be, you're still talking about something that's not within you, that has the ability to change your chemistry, your body chemistry, your electromagnetic field, into something that we might call salvation or recovery or enlightenment. Those kind of things.
You talked about it with meditation, right? How meditation...
Yeah. I was just sitting here thinking about, it's very common after, you know, World War II, men came home. You know what? I'm going to have a big family. So the guys in that I hang around with that are semi around my age have a reflection of their parent 1950 mentality. So which is very bootstraps. Meta what? Just give me the shovel. I'm going to shovel some more. I'm going to make some money. Deeply, deeply ingrained into the physical world, and that is the mind that trained me. And I grew up on a dairy farm, and it was everything was physical. Matter of fact, I think I was kind of treated like a shovel. You're a tool on a farm, which really makes your mind work around the physical, and if there is nothing else. And that's of course what my parents believed. But getting sober and not getting the total relief, you know, 8 years in, and me saying to my new sponsor, because I finally said I got to ask the smartest guy that I know to help me, me not having happy, joyous, and free feelings all the time. And I was like, why don't I get it? You know, I see other people with it, but I'm 8 years in. I want it all. And he said, well, you're halfway in. You haven't committed your life to AA and all that kind of thing. So he put down a list of things. And one of those things was to truly learn how to meditate. He goes, you don't have any idea how it is. And I'm not talking about 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes at night, which you're going to have to work up to a year later get to that point. I'm talking about being educated on it. Go out and find a solution. There's a million types of meditation. Find one that works for you.
Mm.
So I think I was at the library finding a computer, and I said, all right, what's the fastest way to God? I typed in. And this ancient yoga or this ancient philosophy of type of yoga came up called Kriya Yoga. And Kriya in Sanskrit means effort, hard work, focused work. And a little while later, I came across somebody in Atlanta that was teaching it. Norma was from Argentina, I think, and so she was essentially one or two times a week doing meditation. And I got up to, I could do 2.5 or 3 hours with her.
Wow.
And didn't know a lot about it, but I asked her a lot of questions. And she said, this is an ancient type. And she talked about the power of your mind and your body. As an example, if you put two measuring devices on each pinky on the end of them, and I stared at one of those pinkies, and I imagined the blood flow increasing and my body sending more blood and more energy to this one just by looking at it. You could measure both pinkies. Just the fact that I'm thinking about that one, the blood pressure would increase. So my mind can focus on different areas of my body, focus that electricity, so to speak, is the way that she talked about it. And she also talked about it, that the ancient had some kind of idea what it was, but weren't really sure. They kind of described it as somehow there's an atomic level, and then there's a level below that, like electrons swirling around electrons. Mm. And it's in that dimension that everything goes through. So, which is really, you know, topical right now. It's described differently now, but it's the same thing. So they've also, you know, she would point to a study where you could send light or photons in a dark room through a hole and look at where those photons hit the wall. They could measure the number of photons, which is physical energy, hitting the wall, and then they would bring somebody in the room, three or four people, just to view it. And the fact that people were viewing the photons hitting the wall changed it.
Huh.
Just because you're viewing it. So, anyway, I was with Norma for quite a while, and my mind opened up. She used to talk about quieting down. There's two parts to you, Dean. You think your intellectual mind is you. It's your ego telling that it's you.
Right.
And you will and that mind will consistently operate to give the world, reflect off the world, a feedback that keeps you consistent. It doesn't want to change. In other words, it's acting to get a reflection back to make sure you're you. And that's your intellectual mind. The other, shut that down and let your spiritual center open up. And said, after a while, you'll see a doorway that opens, which it did. And then my mind opened up several times, which changed my life.
Yeah. So that was your spiritual experience or spiritual awakening, really?
It was
It changed, an awakening.
I had already been sober for a while, and I'm believing in God, and things had changed, and I had evidence. But the depth of the feeling that happened to me in those 30 or 60 second moments of that deeper meditation, when my mind opened up already,
yeah,
shocked me to a point where it changed my chair in the room. In other words, it changed my belief system. So I no longer thought of things as I did. It was that dramatic of a shift for 30 seconds or a minute.
Yeah. And we're talking about kind of like how your beliefs, right, your thoughts, and how that affects kind of matter and physical. And so I watched a great documentary on Netflix called Believe. And the guy on there is talking about stem cells and how he breaks these three sets of stem cells into three different culture mediums. And each stem cell, it's the same stem cell, but, you know, separated, you know, duplicates and becomes something different. One becomes a lung, one becomes a liver, one becomes whatever. And so what he was able to determine was that the environment was what created the outcome of the cell. And so he tied that and connected that to how when people are sick, right, or how people with positive thinking or a lot of prayer or they have a lot of family support, when they're sick, they can actually show proven that people get better faster or they recover from diseases that they never thought they would recover from. But the power of positive thinking, what he's saying is that the cells in your body, they don't know what environment they're in. But your perception of reality is giving them the environment that they live in. And so if your perception of reality is that everything is ultimately going to work out, things are going to be okay, then you're creating a positive environment for your cells, which helps you to actually get better. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, what you're getting to is the theory of relativity. That the word relativity is relationship. And it was originally Einstein's theory of gravity. What he was trying to explain is the relationship of gravity to matter and mass. And when we talk about the theory of relativity, we're talking about perspective in a lot of ways. When we bring it outside of mathematics and the world of physics, we're talking about the relationship I have to my reality based on my perspective, my position, how I look at things. And my perspective is built on a lot of things. My belief structure, my experiences, the influences of other people around me, whether I believe it or not. So we come up on step two, right? And we come to believe in a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. And there's some really interesting things about that past the come to believe part. The belief part's obviously important, but we're going to build into that. It's a journey to belief. Yeah. It's a practice. Mm-hmm. But I have some notion out there that there's an external thing that represents sanity. That there's something out there that's established the standard of right and wrong. that somehow or another, right exists independent of me. And I got to think of some way of achieving that particular goal. And step two is telling me that it doesn't say I come to believe that I can achieve rightness. And it doesn't say I come to believe that somebody in my family or a counselor or a psychiatrist or a treatment model or a particular program or some doctrine or philosophy is going to do it for me. It says that I come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore. In other words, I was born sane. I have sanity within me. And it's to be restored and brought back to good. When you restore a house, for instance, you take it back to its better state or a new state, right? When you restore a car, you take something that's beat up and junked up and you refurbish it and recreate what it is back to maybe something better, maybe even more modernized. And sanity, you know, this idea that there's a foundational point of good, perhaps rational, maybe even objective, which is a great word, behavior or a standard of living or a way of treating people that exists, and that we've somehow all agreed on what that is, because it's external. Our relative positions, when we look at sanity, we would generally agree on what that means.
Yeah.
And that's what it's going to bring me to, and I can't do it myself. I was unable to do it myself, I can tell you that. And so a powder grade, I think I told you my little Debbie cake thing. So when I think about it, there's this philosophy out there called phenomenology, and it's this idea that God is working, or the force is working, the creative power is working, the universe is working all the time to make specific changes. And so what I want you to do, if you're watching this podcast, is just imagine your favorite little Debbie cake and your favorite drink on a day not any different than today. I think today would represent just about anybody's perfect day, and we had nothing to do with that. See, metaphysics, right? And you go to the store, and you know right where that little Debbie cake's at in your favorite store, and the parking lot was paved, and all the traffic lights worked, and you get there, and you pick up your little Debbie cake, and you go up, and they check you out at the counter, and you pay your money, and all this works perfect. You get home, and you're sitting on your patio on a perfect day, and you say, oh my gosh, I've got it made. This is really living. I am going to eat this entire box of Swiss rolls and 4 gallons of Country Time lemonade. That's what I'm going to do today. It's going to be perfect. And you realize that tens of thousands of people are involved in manifesting that event. The people that invented the packaging, the display, that put in the traffic lights, that put in the pavement, that invented the materials, that invented the tractors. Thousands of patents, which are extremely difficult things to get, are involved with that. The training of the cashier, because if, and the contrast to that is if you went to that store and went to the Little Debbie stand and they were out of your favorite cake, you might find yourself kind of pissed off, you know? Like, what? Well, how could this be? It's that predictable that a giant coordinated effort can occur that consistently, that predictably, that reliably is where I started to find God. That's where I looked out and said, well, there's something to that. I can't get along with 15 people in a room most of the time. I don't know how all these thousands of people manage to unconsciously, unknowing of one another, without any contact at all, be coordinated to such a degree that a perfect little experience can be created for me with minimal effort, with just arrogant effort. By God, it's going to be there, and this is going to go the way I want it to go. So that's a starting point for me.
All right. That's awesome. Something you said kind of hit me, and where does it come from? Let's just say, all right, where is an ultimate truth? What's the what represents the way to live for a human being, the best way?
Yeah.
And I guess somehow I believe that during the process of when a human being's being manifested, it's tattooed on their heart.
Hmm.
You know, it's some way to... It's the way to live, the best way to be. And the more that my mind, my judgmental, fear-driven, I'm not enough, inadequate mind allows me to make decisions that actually push me further away from my deeper truth. It pushes me further away from my heart.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe animals out there that don't have the conscience or the thinking mind that we have, maybe they already connect with this love and compassion that's everywhere, and it's energy coming off of everything.
Yeah.
And they automatically do it, and they know to go south, and know to reproduce, and they know to call for a mate, and they know all that kind of stuff. And maybe down deep I've got the same thing imprinted on my heart but I allow my mind and the dysfunction of my childhood, where I'm not enough, which is the lie, to distance me from that.
Yeah.
And so essentially what that is me not loving me. Me with the lack of acceptance of self. And because our minds are different, that can occur. And by taking off all these layers and so forth, it actually moves me closer.
Yeah.
So, and when I, and this other intellectual mind is actually closer to my brain than it is my heart. The problem is I got to drop those things and let it go and fall into more of an existence.
Yeah.
Do the hard work, but get out of the results business. Allow this to take over and pull me along. Just put the energy forward.
Yeah.
And stay in the vibration with love and compassion, because I think that's what it is.
Mm.
And through meditation and in a practical way, what happened to me is the overwhelming feeling is that everything is one.
Yeah.
You know, that I got. So the cells in your arm and your shirt and your glasses are identical and connected to the microphone in my hand. It's all as in one. My brain wants to somehow squeeze out happiness like chess pieces. If I could just move them around correctly with money, material things, cars, that, then I can then, and it tells me over and over that it's possible.
Right.
So I keep on trying to do it, and it's an illusion. It can't happen.
Yeah.
The only thing that can happen is me to get closer to that heart with a tattoo on it.
Right.
And as I move closer to it, I start to feel, wow, this is real.
Yeah.
And what it comes down to, it's about people. You know, 80% of your happiness comes from human beings and intimacy and people. And I will fight that tooth and nail. And due to the disease that I have, it tells me. And the solution for my main problem with the disease I have, that my inability to connect with other human beings.
Yeah.
And the thing that's going to give me the greatest amount of happiness is connecting.
Yeah.
So over the years, I guess I think it's all science. I think it's all energy. I think my body's giving off energy. I feel better when I'm my chakra. I think it's all the same.
Yeah.
You know?
Connected.
I think the Easterners had it down, and that's what I believe.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's interesting. You know, the Genesis story in the Bible, Christians always reference it to point out original sin, right, which is chapter 3. And they for some reason, forget to start at chapter 1, which is original blessing, which you see. And whether you think of the Genesis story as a literal story or a poem, it's no less profound, right? That here is God going, it's good, it's good, it's good. It's good. It's not good. Let me make it good. Okay, now it's good. And he just kind of claims this original blessing that everything's good. And what's also interesting is in the Genesis story is when the shit goes bad is when they eat from the tree of the fruit of knowledge and good and evil. When they become this conscious judge of things to be able to say that I need to move this around and this and that. So they come into this whole thing. And so, and then you have the rest of the story, which is God trying to convince them that's not the case, right? You know, and then for me, what I kind of believe is that's the cross is the final exclamation point on that says, all right, look here, this is how it's fixed. It's done, right? And it's interesting because for me, I'm always drawing things back to my Christian faith. And when we start talking about the science of spirituality or the science of faith, I just see all these scriptures come up, you know, where like even in there's a verse in the New Testament where the Apostle Paul says that you were enemies of God in your own mind. So in your mind, you perceived yourself as separate. And even in the Genesis story, you see them, they cover themselves and they hide from God because they think now that they've eaten this knowledge and they got this consciousness in their brain. Now they think, oh, something's wrong with me. I can't be there. But in the Genesis story, God is there with them. So God never leaves them, right? The source of life. And it's all about a perception of how do you see it. If you see it as I'm connected to this source, then the possibilities are endless. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. there's a couple of things interesting about the theory of relativity and how it references things like light. And, of course, the Bible's full of the reference of Jesus as being the light. Mm-hmm. And light, time, and space fold back on themselves. So the ideas of karma, and that's hard to imagine, but you just imagine you send a ball rolling in a sphere, and it's coming back. It's coming back right to you. It's boomerang style effect, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea of reap what you sow comes to mind with what you were saying.
Yeah.
That no matter what I put in the soil, I'm going to get a lot more out of it. So it's important that I can put patience, love, kindness, tolerance, those kind of things into the soil. But when I was using, I couldn't do that. I didn't do that. I put judgmentalism and condemnation and negative thoughts and energy out there. So, you know, when I back into recovery and I come back to that sanity, I go right back to what you're saying, that there's something in me in those first two stories. There's something that's good that, like you said, it's tattooed on my heart.
Yeah.
And I already know what that is intuitively. It's in me and I can't escape it. And I want it to come out. And that's the God in me.
Yeah.
It's already there. Am I going to experience it or not? And I also have this inner prompting that some people think of as the Holy Spirit. It's commonly referred to as the still small voice. This director that says, hey, Dan, you know, why don't you try this? And I commonly deny that voice because it's like, no, because I don't want to give up the money. Or no, because I don't want to give up the attention. And to what Dean was saying, that, you know, what am I after in life? And for myself, it came down to significance and purpose. Mm-hmm. Now, I want a sense from other people, right? I want a relationship with my spouse that's about significance and purpose. And I want to have relative purpose in my children's life. And I want to be able to affect my friends in some other ways. And we're really thrilled to say stuff in recovery like, I'm powerless over these other people. And then we switch from care and kindness to apathy and complacency. And we like to say, I got to do acceptance. Acceptance, if you can picture a seesaw, acceptance is the fulcrum. You know, we're back to some physics here.
Yeah.
But the acceptance is the fulcrum upon which it pivots. It's not an end point, because then you are to do the job of God and to bring the patience, kindliness, and tolerance into the situation after the acceptance. And the big worry I have when I think about I'm powerless over people is I forget that by my demonstration of these principles, practicing them in my affairs, I do affect other people.
Yeah,
I'm not controlling them, but I definitely do affect them. And if I want to go with that 11th tradition from the 1-12-step program and make it more attractive, you know, make this way of life attractive, if I want to show people that the gospel of the Bible is true, it's very important that I bring forward, and to my own benefit, the things that it teaches me to do. Not because I have to, but because I want to.
Yeah.
Not because I think it'll work, because it's a fantastic strategy, a set of directions for life that works, that is tried and true. And I don't think it's limited to the Bible. There's all kinds of different ways to come about those same things. But it's definitely in there, you know? And for me, that it's vital to eliminate judgment. And the key to judgment is when I judge somebody and they make me angry, it's me that's angry, not them. And when I judge somebody and I think that they're below me, it's me that's below them because I'm the one feeling it. It's my experience. And that's the metaphysics of it.
Yeah.
That what I project in the world is a reflection of myself and the way I think. That what the way I see other people really represents my view of myself. And that's something I learned early on in recovery, mostly from my wife, as she tried to work through our difficult times when I was using drugs and drinking, you know, and some of the ways I treated her, which were awful. And she had to work through it. And she told me that. She's like, oh, you weren't mad at me. You were mad at you.
Wow.
You know, the things you said at me, you were really just talking about you and how you hated yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, one, here's a funny thing. It says to love your neighbor as thyself. And I always wonder, what if you're a raging crackhead, you know? You can, and you do it. You do this naturally.
Yeah.
That statement isn't a charge, an order.
Yeah.
It's a statement of truth.
Yeah.
That this is how you will do.
Yeah.
And I go, wow, you know, I was a drunk, high, crazy person. And I treated people like that. And now that I'm in recovery and have discovered the power of God, the incredible resource of prayer and meditation, the sense of a spirit-filled life and the connectivity of everything, I believe I'm responsible for a much different type of behavior.
Yeah.
And I work to make that intuitive. I think you, that's somewhere we connect some too, Dean, right there.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think, it goes back to a guy who wrote a book that was instrumental to Bill and Bob. And it was kind of a strange way where Bill found out about the book. because it was written turn of the century when people were giving pushback to the Catholic Church and saying, how can they be the biggest landowners? That kind of stuff, you know, and they say, well, did Jesus intend for things to be this way? And I'm trying to always think of the guy's name.
William James?
No.
Emmett Fox.
So Sermon on the Mount. And essentially, Emmett Fox said this. And that's why I quote it, because it's one sentence and it's powerful. And he says, the definition of the Bible. The Bible is about essentially one sentence. And Bill reiterated it, and then I found it. And he said, essentially, the Bible is that your consciousness, your mind, has dominion over the physical world. That's it. Yep. And that's exactly what we're talking about. And here's a guy who broke it all down. All the stories and much of the book is to point you in that direction and give you lessons. And Jesus wasn't special. He was better at it. But you have the same capability as he do.
Right.
So you've just got to utilize your mind more. We get so tied up in the physical world with our thinking mind, we forget to use the other piece.
Yeah.
So, and this has been going on a long time. I came across a book from, I guess it was written in the 1700s, I guess, it's long ago. And it was an interview, maybe early 1800s, an interview with the Crow medicine man somewhere out west. And then it was translated, and he basically said, because it was before metal, they didn't have any metal, they didn't have anything else, so as a piece of pipe, they would use a bone or a femur from a big animal, and over time, it would almost get, it was like a piece of chrome down the middle, it was so shiny, from use. So, and they explained that because he would say, I am nothing except a shiny bone. So he was a conduit from there to people. That's it. And really all of this and my ability to interact at a metaphysical level or a non-physical level and get out of my own way comes to me getting smaller. And it could be positive and negative. Taking care of my old wounds and regrets. I got grief piled up in me. It wants to come out. Even if it wasn't my responsibility if it wasn't my fault a long time ago, it's my responsibility now. But I've got to clean out anything that adheres me to the physical world or the past and get smaller and smaller and smaller and then serve people. That's really where it's taking me. And that's the deepest truth. That's what my heart wants, is to help people and give over and over with zero expectations.
Yeah.
And so when I'm doing that, I'm in that vibration. And things, laws of attractions that are there, things just happen. And there's rules. And that can take over my life as well, and I think it has.
Yeah.
So if I continue to act appropriately and get smaller over time, which is tough for me because I get so excited about stuff. You know, I'm over the top, and I'm already working on it, you know, before I even own a place, whatever. And so I've got to watch that. But, you know, and I have a wonderful, fun, exciting life. But I never stop trying to cultivate new relationships with young people or people that where I'm of use to them and to help them over time and spend time with them.
Yeah.
You know, and believe in them. You know, sometimes that's all you need. Like, I agreed.
Yeah.
You know, I gave him a hug. I said, I believe in you. You're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Over and over and over. And you know what?
Yeah.
He's fine.
Yeah.
He's doing good. He's doing the same thing to young men now.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's the whole world's a big ball of vibration. I was just outside it. I was like the earth next to the moon, and I had no way of entering it because my vibration was so different, so negative.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was a victim.
Yeah.
So
I think over this last few days, I've experienced a lot of what you guys are talking about and just hanging out with you guys and having the experiences, you know, where we went on a boat in the middle of the ocean where I'm like, I've never been this far away from land except for going up. And so that was a trip, but it's also the people that I'm with as I'm experiencing it that, you know, I didn't feel this sense of like, oh, I got to hurry up and get there, or I got to hurry up and do this because everyone's waiting, or there was this kind of like, we're taking this thing as it goes, and then it unfolded fantastically, you know? And so that's a very elusive thought for me, right? It's just to take it. And when I told my family, because we were all coming out here, I told them, yeah, well, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know where we're staying. I don't know how long we're going to stay. And my kids are looking at me. My wife was looking at me like, you're the one saying you don't know, and you're okay with this, you know? I'm okay with not knowing. Yeah, I'm okay with not knowing. And that seemed to be a common theme over this weekend for me personally, that I've been like, it is interesting. And even in Reed's story and throughout the weekend, it just kept coming back to me like, hey, man, just enjoy the ride. And I remember my counselor in rehab telling me that. He's like, man, you just got to get on. I was asking him some deep theological question. You know, he's a pastor and stuff, so I was waiting for him to answer this deep. And he goes, hey, man, you just got to get on the wave. Just got to enjoy the ride. You know, that was the best pastoral advice I ever got. And so that was 8 years ago or so, and I'm still trying to learn how to ride that wave. And I think this concept, this God concept, this principle at play in my life is the most... I have the most chance of gaining that ability to just be and be in the moment if I can, you know, maintain this conscious contact with God in a real way, in an authentic way, not in a religious way that it's supposed to be. And so that's definitely, I think, a focus of mine in recovery right now. And so this podcast, I think, is right on time for that. And I hope it's helpful for somebody else who's out there and they got all these kind of ideas and thoughts about God, and hopefully we've given them some sort of forum to say, yeah, I was thinking of that, you know, and that it's okay to kind of like let this thing grow over time and find where you fit in, right? So let's give some parting thoughts for somebody who is, you know, struggling with this or struggling with the religion of their past, and kind of some advice or, I don't know, something that might be useful.
Well, I would. I grew up in a Catholic church, and it was a very condemning, black and white place. And the difference is now, I believe that there's a right, there's not a wrong. There's a right and a not right. It's not wrong. You know, there's only one way to go about it, and then you can be off path. And, sooner or later we get back on path. They may have mental illness and that kind of stuff, but for the most part, everybody can get on path. The formula to get back on path is the program that's been used in a number of different religions and for many, many years, and it works. Yeah. But I guess what I personally would like to convey is that I have a pretty cool life, and I feel spiritually connected most of the time, still working on my own stuff. But what I truly believe God to be and how it works is more science than, which is spirit to me. It's all science. I think there's a lot of paths up the same mountain. I think I took one. I think electrons whirling around electrons. So every time I pray or think about someone or believe something, it may send out a wavelength, and it's going to connect with something else. And the belief in that deeper truth has served me well as being my higher power. And I've been sober almost 30 years now, and was living in my car. And, you know, I got a cool life now, and I don't live in my car anymore. So... God is good, baby. God is good.
And I just like to say that no matter where you are in recovery, especially if you're new to it, that you don't have to believe anything right now. The belief part is going to come out of your experience. So whether you believe it or not, or think it's good or not, you might think it's dumb. When I got to 12-step, I was like, these crazy, cultish, whack jobs. What in the world have I walked into? So I tell you, I don't think that anymore, but I did. So if you're sitting there thinking this is stupid, there's two things I want you to ask yourself. One of them is, why don't you want this to be true? Mm. What is it about you that doesn't want the 12-step program of recovery to be true? What makes you unwilling to do it? And that's a self-exploration question with no wrong answer.
Yeah.
The second one is, I want you to ask yourself, am I worth it? And when you look in the mirror, you're going to think, no, I'm not. But I want you to know that there's people in your life that love you, and the only thing they want is for you to be successful in recovery. You're worth it. You're more than worth it. In the world of physics, the carbon you're made of came from a supernova. And the God I described to you had to blow up a star in order to gather the materials to put you together. You're worth it.
Yeah.
You're a very small percentage chance at existence, and your consciousness is of enormous value in the universe. Because like Dean was saying, it's through your way of thinking, through your consciousness, that you create your life. So give that second step a sincere try and know what waits for you is something really important. And that is to save other people's lives.
Yeah.
Our job is to save other addict, other troubled people's lives. No one else is uniquely qualified but you to save that next person that shares your story. There's no one on planet Earth, no doctor, no preacher, nobody, no parent, no guide, no counselor, no science that can do what you can do for somebody.
Yeah.
So embark on the training. Go for it whether you believe in it or not. Give it all you got. And let your God form around your experiences. Form your image of God by the way you experience God in your life. Come to believe and find that you are not insane. And you will move on to a beautiful life. And my hopes and prayers are that you do just that.
Yeah, that's good. So if you made it this far on the podcast, then congratulations. If you email me, I will send you a pack of Little Debbie cakes. contact at the Most High Show. And also, if you made it this far, then you obviously like us enough. So if you can just give us a rating and like a star on where you've listened to this podcast, and check us out at themosthighshow.com. We're always open to donations, monthly donations and things like that, to keep this ship going and to grow it and to continue to create content like this. So thanks, Dane. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. Thanks, Leslie, behind the camera.
Yay!
And thank you, God, for this beautiful day and the ocean that I'm about to jump in.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye.